It's time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello and welcome to episode 39 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. I can't believe the Cowboy Champions Summit is only 2 weeks away. It seems like I've been planning this event forever and now it's almost here, which is really exciting. I don't want you guys to miss it, so make sure you go to cowboysummit.com and get registered. It'll run June 1st through June 6th with a session featured each day, starting with Kayla Muscle's live kickoff on June 1st. Kayla's session will be followed by speakers like Van Hargis, who is an excellent clinician who travels the world, and he also specializes in ranch horse versatility. Our friend bull rider Wiley Peterson is going to be back talking about mindfulness and really how to achieve the ideal mindset when you're competing. And that goes for anything, not just bull riding. Barbara Schulte is going to be back talking about a lot of the mental aspects of riding and also competing, really getting into how to enjoy that journey with your horses more. We'll also hear from the founder of Willfully Guided Horsemanship, Allison Trimble, about pursuing a horse-life balance, something I know I myself struggle with greatly, and I know many of you do as well. And then Josh Peek is also going to be doing a session on basically breaking down how he has achieved his level of success in rodeo. Josh is unique in that he competes in two events and he's made it to the NFR in both of those events. So we're really going to be breaking down what it takes to get to that level and why he has made it so far in his career when many other talented athletes don't. These speakers have a lot to offer, so I really don't want you to miss out on the summit. And if you're worried about missing out on any of the sessions, if you go to cowboysummit.com right now and register, you can actually purchase the recordings and the videos for a really, really low price. So it's totally free to register, but I just wanted to let you know that that option is there as well. Now I want to introduce you to today's guest. So far, there's been bull riders on the show, there's been bronc riders, there's been people from many different facets of rodeo and Western competition. But one event that is really popular that we haven't touched on too much yet is team roping. So I wanted to have somebody on to talk about team roping and kind of get into the best ways to get into the event if that's something that you want to do. So today's guest is Brett Beach. Brett's been to the NFR three times, both on the heading end and the heeling end of things. In a few years, he and several other of the great team ropers decided they wanted to put together a resource for people to access training videos online. So Brett started TotalTeamRoping.com. And it's really cool for those people who are in areas where they might not have world-class instruction living right down the road, but you can still log on to TotalTeamRoping.com, take in some of the videos, and pick up a lot of pointers. Brett has a TV show on RFD as well. So there's a lot of different ways for you to access his content. But without further ado, let's jump into my interview with Brett Beach. Thank you so much, Brett, for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to have you here.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here, Alyssa.
So before we get started, I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about because I just think team roping has blown up in the last probably, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, it's got huge in the last 15 years. It started growing pretty good about 15 years ago. And then here, you know, recently in the last 4 or 5 years, it's just I can't guess how many people rope now, but I know it's quadrupled probably in the last 5 to 6 to 8 years.
Yeah, and it's kind of become more accessible for people and easier with the number system and all that for people to get started and sort of be able to compete against others that are at their same level rather than having to jump in and compete against the big dogs right off the bat.
That's basically probably what you just said. Yeah, that's what that's what brought it to where it's at, you know, years ago. That's when I learned, when I was coming up and learning, Clay O'Brien Cooper, Alan Box, those kind of guys. I mean, we roped against whoever was there. If somebody showed up that could beat you, you had no choice, either go home or stay and rope and learn how to get better and beat them. But, you know, mostly, and when you look back, hindsight's 20/20, that's probably what kept team roping beat down for so long, because, you know, you had the working man out there. He doesn't rope all day. He can't compete with me.
Right.
I rope all day. That's all I think about, eat, breathe, and sleep roping. Well, these guys that have jobs come home, try to rope for an hour in the evenings, 3 days a week. They couldn't go compete against me or them other guys.
Right.
So when they kind of start balancing that out, that number system, and putting, you know, roping against people that probably have jobs too, you know, so it just made it explode. And the ropers, the people who are involved in roping now, is phenomenal. I mean, if you got doctors, lawyers, actors, ranchers, farmers, construction, every walk of life is involved in it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So how did you get involved in roping yourself?
Oh, that was a family thing. I grew up. Mm. That's all I knew. That's what my dad did. I mean, I just had a rope in my hand from the time I was 10 months old. Mm. And I didn't know anything else, you know. So when I came up, that's what we did. I didn't play sports. I roped. So when the other kids was out playing baseball and football or whatever, I was throwing a rope. So that's all I knew. I knew roping and riding, and that's all I ever did.
Yeah, that's definitely probably the best way to learn, is you don't know any different and you've always got a rope in your hand. It makes it pretty easy to get comfortable swinging one and sort of just learning, because you're immersed in it all the time. It's easy.
Sure. You know, like I help a lot of little kids. People will bring their kids over wanting you to teach them how to rope. All I do is just kind of show them where to stand out on the dummy and build them a loop that I want them to use. And I just, you get out of a little kid's way, he teaches himself how to swing. Mm. Every little kid you've ever seen, they have to do a lot of things correct to be able to swing the rope. And because they're small, they're weak, you know, so they have to use a lot of arm. They have to do a lot of things that kind of builds them a good foundation. I honestly don't think, I can never remember anybody teaching me anything till I was probably, you know, I don't know, 14, 15 years old, you know, and then I'd be around better ropers. And they would give me little tips. By that time, I mean, I could catch every time. You know, I mean, I've won a lot of big ropings when I was, open ropings when I was 12 and 13 years old, because I had a 10-year head start on most people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely makes a difference. So what was your path like? I mean, did you move up through the ranks of, like, I mean, going to jackpot ropings, high school, college rodeo?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I went junior rodeo, high school, college. It's kind of funny, because probably at that time I was roping with Clay a lot. I roped with him in college, with Clay O'Brien Cooper, roped with him in college. I actually kind of went to school for a couple of years. Alan Bach went to the same place. And there was no numbering system then. There was no system to try to match people, let people rope against their, you know, light competitors. And when we got out of college, we took off and we went to back to, you know, that's why I lived in Arizona. So we took off, went to Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, going to a bunch of ropings and jackpots. And that's how we learned. Well, then it got to the point when we went back home, people did not want to rope against us. You know, at the time we didn't understand it. You know, we was young and probably a little cocky. You know, it's like, well, go practice like we did, then you can rope against us, you know. But you don't understand at the time, these guys have jobs.
Right.
And families to take care of, you know. So that's, we was probably one of the biggest reasons that numbering system started, because they had actually, we'd pull up to roping sometimes and people would just unsaddle their horses and wouldn't rope.
Wow.
And so you look at how that affects the whole industry. It was bad for the whole industry, hurt the stock contractors. I mean, not that they liked us as people, but they hated to see us show up.
Yeah.
Because it would kill their ropings.
Yeah. And most people aren't able to eat, breathe, and sleep roping like you did.
That's exactly right. You know, and so, you know, probably the biggest, you know, there was guys that came along, Booger Barters, and they started figuring out how to put on major ropings. And then, you know, along came Denny Gentry. And when Denny Gentry came along, he just revolutionized team roping. He took it from nothing to what it is today. He's the one guy, the one person that is responsible for all this. All of these people that sell ropes, trailers, saddles, anything that's related to horses and roping, he's the man that's brought it to where it's at. And I've told him that before, and he says, oh, somebody would have figured it out. Well, maybe they would have, but somebody didn't. It was him.
Now, is he the one that came up with the number system?
Well, there was some number system. You know, they was trying different systems like that, like an A, B, C, and D roper. Mm. they would classify you basically, you know. So I was an A roper. Clay, you know, obviously Clay and Allen and all those guys was A ropers. So they would have a rope and it was a B rope, and that means you're not coming. You know. But Denny figured out how to put a system together where they started doing it nationwide, trying to classify everyone and trying to, you know, classify them in the right. So people, when they come to the roping, they thought they had a chance. Mm-hmm. They left home thinking they had a chance. And I think that was the key. I think that was the thought process behind that. Let them, you know, during the week, when they left the house, they was going to rope and they thought they could win something at.
Yeah. And that's very encouraging for someone who's just learning how to rope to know that they have a chance to go out and win a check or a buckle or whatever, because it keeps you wanting to do it. I mean, who wants to go give your money away every single weekend?
It's amazing how many people still do it. I don't mean that in a bad way. But people still do that today. It's like, I sit there but I guess when they leave the house, they think they got a chance, but these ropings pay so dang good anymore.
Yeah. And it doesn't really matter what level you're at. You've still got to work at it and you've still got to practice and you've still got to have some good instruction in order to go out there and win and continue to improve.
That's the key, is getting some help. I mean, to me, you know, there's so much available to people now. You know, they have an opportunity that, quite frankly, when we learned on our own. I mean, we really didn't have anybody helping us. There was nothing available. There was no other resources you could go get help from unless there's a friend or you knew somebody that's better than you. You know, nowadays, you know, there's a lot of schools. There's a lot of, which is kind of the reason I came up with the total team roping concept. Put it on the internet because everybody's got a computer now, but hopefully most people can use it better than I can.
I think that's awesome. I mean, of course, with what I do, I am just a huge proponent of getting that information out there so that it's easy for people to get, because not everybody lives with a world champion team roper right down the street that can go sure. Get world-class instruction every night of the week, or even if it's not a world champion team roper, but somebody that is a really good instructor. There's only so many of them.
Sure. They don't have access to it. And even though I kind of got away from roping for a while, I started a real estate business. I would still go do schools. And it was amazing to me when I'd go do schools, I'd sit there and look at these people and going, you know, why are they doing some of the things they do, you know, because they haven't had access to anything or anybody that can help them. Mm-hmm. And it's so important when you're learning, if you can start and build a pretty good foundation of just a swing, roping's actually pretty easy. But if you start wrong and get the wrong mechanics, I mean, it's hard. It's just hard to do. And so that was kind of the concept behind what me and Clay O'Brien, Cesar De La Cruz, Charles Pogue. That's what the premise behind this was, is give these people access to something they can actually look at and go, you know, refer back to. You know, we've made it where they can send in videos, they can call us, they can ask questions. We're trying to, you know, kind of revolutionize the way people learn this.
Yeah. And what's really neat about team roping to me is that it's something that you can sort of get started on the path to learning without even having a horse or anything. I mean, you just need a rope and a dummy to kind of at least kind of get your feet wet.
Oh, absolutely. If everyone, you know, which very rarely does this happen, but if they would learn how to rope on the ground, I mean, I can't tell you how many schools I've done where half the students should have spent the 2 days roping the dummy. Mm-hmm. They don't understand the importance of building that foundation, that swing, where that's what you know. Because what happens, regardless of what you're practicing, pretty soon, that's your habit. That's your swing, and you own that thing.
Yeah.
So if you've taught yourself the wrong swing, and then you climb on a horse and regardless of how good you ride, if your swing's messed up, you've put a ceiling on your roping.
Right.
The swing is the ceiling on your roping. Just like, you know, if you take the same guy that and you teach him a perfect swing on the ground, take 6 months, 2 months, a year, whatever it takes to just build that perfect swing, but he doesn't know how to ride, then you put him on a horse. Well, now his riding is the ceiling on his roping. Mm-hmm. You know, and so riding is, you know, like I try to get people all the time. I have a guy down here close to where I live in Bernie in Texas that I recommend they go to him to learn how to ride, because I don't teach riding. I've been on a horse since I was 4 years old. And so I just know how to ride. I can't really explain to you some of the things they do, but this guy teaches it, and he teaches you how to move with your horse, how to balance, where your legs need to be. You know, and this is just stuff that I do that I couldn't tell you how I do that.
Right.
But if they'll separate the two, learn how to rope on the ground, but at the same time you're taking riding lessons, but don't put that rope with you until you have developed that swing. And then I'll give you a perfect example is Patrick Smith. He's won the world two or three times. And he could have won it, and he was right there to win it three more times. He just didn't, the finals didn't go his way. But that guy never picked a rope up or never got on a horse till he was 16 years old. And fortunately enough for him, he was around people who actually knew the importance of that. So he had to learn how to rope on the ground. They would not let him put his rope on. He would learn it. He'd rope the dummy. They'd teach him how to swing. And at the same time, he was taking riding lessons. So like I'm saying, he developed his swing, but at the same time, he's taking riding lessons. So when they did start letting him get on a horse, he was riding decent, but he had a good swing. So he started putting those two together. Then over time, he just developed both of them, you know, and he never created a multitude of bad habits.
Right. Yeah. And that's huge. And what I love about his story is that he didn't start out with a rope in his hand at 4 years old, but he was still able to develop those skills and become a world champion team roper.
Sure. He's a really good athlete. He rode a motocross. So obviously he didn't have much fear of speed and that kind of thing
you know,
when he did get on a horse. So, you know, but I guess the point is that he never, when he started, he didn't develop bad habits.
Yeah.
Because it is so much easier to create a habit and it is 20 times harder to break a habit.
Mm-hmm.
I just heard the other day that this was pretty interesting. I read it on a plane. It was in a book. It said the only way to get rid of a bad habit, you can't break that bad habit. The only way you can truly break it is to replace it with a good one.
Yeah.
That kind of made sense.
Yeah, for sure. And
I've got a lot of replacing to do.
Well, it seems like to me, I mean, I roped a little bit and stuff. I'm definitely not like an outstanding roper, but I've worked a lot more on my horsemanship than I ever have my roping. And I always say that I think it's really important for people who are just getting into horses to know what a good horse feels like, because if they don't ever understand like what a broke horse feels like, they're never going to know whether,
sure,
you know, whether their horse is doing things the right way. And to me, it's kind of the same thing with roping. If you don't know how your loop is supposed to go on, if you don't have somebody instructing you on that and showing you the proper way of doing it, then you're not going to know when you're doing it wrong.
Oh, you're not going to have a clue. And that's what happens all the time. I mean, people will sit there and rope and practice really hard, you know, because there's a lot of people that really want to do this. And the biggest mistake they make, they go get them a rope and they'll start roping. And the only thing that they're thinking about is the catch. They can sit there and rope that dummy and you can take any swing. I mean, I'm telling you, you can't believe the different swings you can manufacture. And over time, you can figure out how to catch the dummy with that swing.
Right.
The problem is that swing about 95% of the time doesn't work on a horse. And so they've created a habit. Now they take that habit to the horse and now they've got problems, you know, and then it becomes not fun for them.
Yeah. And I know for me, like when I'm roping the dummy or something and I see, okay, well, my loop is just, yeah, it's going on, but it's just not, it doesn't look right to me. There's something that's not working here and I can't figure out what it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go to my brother and I say, hey, Bryce, what am I doing wrong here? And then, oh, lo and behold, I fix that one little thing and then, you know, things are going better, but I actually very rarely can tell what I'm doing wrong. That's why I need somebody to help me.
Well, yeah. And that's another thing that I see a lot of, even after when I help someone, most of the time I'm more focused on their swing. Cause when I get done with them, I want them to understand the swing. I don't want them to come to a school I've done and not have a real good grasp of how their swing is supposed to work, you know, and they'll have it, but you know, it's like anything, unless you kind of continue to get some help, you'll kind of, a lot of times you'll start regressing back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then the first thing they do is they start trying to analyze their own, what they're doing wrong.
Right.
Most of the time, what you do is you analyze it wrong when you're analyzing yourself.
Yeah.
And you'll start trying to fix something, part of it that's not even broke. Well, now what you've done is you've created another problem because you changed something that was working and didn't really go to the real root of the problem.
Yeah, and that is so true with roping. I don't know what it is, but man, it's complicated. There's a lot of little parts and pieces to it, and you change one thing and you change everything.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts.
There is.
I mean, you think about it. You have two guys. You have a header and a heeler. You have a head horse and a heel horse, and you have a steer involved in it. I mean, that's a lot of variables. There's a lot of things that can go wrong right there. But if you have a foundation, if you have a good foundation, if you have a good swing, put some riding skills with that, then it becomes so much easier. It's unbelievable. If you're missing one of those components to it, if you're missing one of those pieces to the puzzle, well, then, you know, that's where you run into issues, which is, you know, that's like any sport. It doesn't matter. I mean, it can be golf, baseball, football, you know, whatever sport you want to pick. You know, if you don't have a good foundation to whatever sport you're trying to do, you know, you're opening the door up. Things are going to happen. And usually, typically, they're not good things.
And there's a lot of different ways that you can get hurt when ropes are involved, too.
You know, that I'm glad you brought that up because that's true. And that's the, you know, like when I do my schools, I do them different than anybody else. When I get to school, they're ready to rope the dummies, and I'll just tell them to get on their horse and go rope. So I just sit back and I'll watch them rope 5, 6, 7 steers apiece, and I just watch them because everybody is an individual. Everybody's in a different place in their roping. I want to see where they're at on their horse. And then I use the dummies to start fixing each person, you know, because they're all in a different spot. Unless I see somebody run a steer and the first thing they do is do something that's definitely dangerous. I'll stop them right there and just tell them, get off. We got to talk here in a little bit, you know, because you can get hurt. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen fingers cut off. I've seen horses fall on people. You know, they don't understand how bad they can get hurt in a box by pulling on a horse, rearing a horse over.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another reason to people having access to somebody can help them to explain stuff to them, you know, like, because they don't understand a lot of it, how quickly things can go really south and you can get hurt and pay for it for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And I think those of us who've been around it a lot, we've seen a lot of wrecks. So we're like really aware of, you know, all the possibilities.
Oh, yeah. I've seen, you know, I've seen so many wrecks. You know, typically it's the header that comes closest to getting in the bad wrecks. Running to the steer, letting their horse get behind them. The steer cuts in front of them and trip their horse. And you see the horse just fumbling, trying to keep his feet. And you're just cringing, just knowing. And these people, like, they're not even aware what almost happened to them. And I'll stop them and I'll say, listen, do you know how close you come to dying right there?
Right.
And they're just smiling like they don't have a clue. You know, I'm like, dang.
Yeah.
You know, it's just something that they haven't been around. They don't understand it. But if you've been around long enough and see people get hurt bad, you know, you can see it coming before it happens, but they never seen it even after it happened.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because, well, we were talking before that I work at a mine. And so safety is a huge component of that. And, you know, anybody who works in construction is familiar with OSHA and everything.
Sure.
But when it comes to horses and whatnot, we don't have those same guidelines. And you know, the thinking is, well, horses are unpredictable. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of situations that we can actually prevent if we're just aware of them.
I mean, about half the time you go to some of these ropings in schools and you just want to hand out hard hats to everyone.
Right. So, you know, we talked a little bit about like the importance of developing your horsemanship while you're developing your swing and learning on the dummy. What about choosing the proper horse for a beginner? You know, how important is that?
I will tell you this. That is probably the most important horse when you're learning. That's the most important horse you're ever going to buy. Because if you buy one that knows his job, regardless of what buttons you push on him, telling him not to do his job, he's still going to go do it. It becomes so much easier. One time, I probably once or twice in the last 40 years, have I seen a horse that was 5, 6, 7-year-old horse that I would tell a beginner roper, go get on this horse and rope. My biggest suggestion to someone is if you're not going to rope that much, but you still like to rope, or you're learning how to rope, don't even look at a horse unless his age is at least double digits. Mm-hmm. And most people have this concept in their mind of like, oh, I don't want an older horse.
Right.
That's the one you need. You need one that's 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, because that horse, if he's 15, he can last till he's 21, 22. If he's 18, still going to get 3 good years out of him. But when you get on that horse, the thing about a horse like that is when you get him out of the pen and saddle him up, that horse is going to be just like he was yesterday, last week, and last month. Mm-hmm. You get a younger horse, they're not like that. Feed has a lot to do with it. The amount of time you spent riding them has a lot to do with it. And the things that you tell them to do has a lot to do with it. And a younger horse, they just start changing. You know, they're like people. They're not patterned yet. So something with get some age on it, and you know, and a lot of people don't know what they want. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I want? Well, you know, that's, and we do that. I've helped several people through Total Team Roping. I will tell them, if you're looking at a horse, send me some videos of that horse. Let me at least watch him go. Mm-hmm. And I can watch a horse go and tell you probably about 80 or 90% of the time whether they need to be on that horse or not, knowing where this person's at in his roping and riding ability.
Yeah. And what about people? It seems like there's people out there who already have horses and they think, well, I want to rope. I'm going to rope on my own horse that I already have.
We're going to learn together. You just want to tell them you need to go get some golf clubs. You and your golf clubs learn together. Because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, when it's just not going to work. I mean, I've had people come to schools and, you know, I can work with them on the dummy and get them, but they can't ride, and they get on a horse, young horse that does not have a clue. Well, I just tell them, I can't help you. I cannot help you on that horse. As much as I'd love to, I can't rope on that horse. So how do you think you're going to? You know, and sometimes I will get on a horse just to, if I think he's not the kind that's going to hurt, if I think he's going to hurt anybody, I won't even let them ride him. Mm-hmm. But I'll get on him and prove to him, like, look how hard it is for me to do it. If it's that hard for me, you have zero chance.
Yeah. And then it's not going to be any fun. It's just discouraging because you go out there, you want to do it, and you can't.
No, it's impossible. I mean, to me, it's like fishing. I love to go fishing, but I love to catch. Mm-hmm. It's no fun to go fishing and not catch. Like, it's no fun to go roping and not catch. You know, it's, that takes all the fun out of it. And over time, you know, it discourages people, and they finally, you know, someone will just get out of it, which right. is, and it came down to one thing. They got the wrong horse.
Yeah, that can definitely, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing that's going to determine whether you're going to stick with it or not.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that will sell you a horse knowing you don't need that horse, but they want to make the sale. Mm-hmm. They'll tell you what you want to hear, and people will buy them, and then, you know, a week later, 2 weeks later, however, whatever that time frame might be, they're going, what did I do?
So with a rope horse, I mean, it's probably pretty important to go try that horse out somewhere and run some steers on it and kind of get a feel for it before you write the check.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, even then, a lot of times you can do that. But, you know, if you've had a guy riding that horse and he's making him work good for the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks, month, whatever it might be, that horse is going to be working pretty good for some runs.
Right.
But you get an inexperienced rider on a horse that's not just dead solid, and that inexperienced rider, what you start doing is you start pulling at the wrong time, you start hitting with the foot at the wrong time, you start pushing buttons that don't need to be pushed. Well, you make enough runs like that, and you are going to start changing the way that horse works. Well, you know, it's not very long before that same horse you bought is not the same horse you bought. You know, it's a whole different horse, and then there you are.
So what's the best way to go out and buy a horse then?
First, I mean, you need to buy the horse from someone you trust. Mm-hmm. Or have someone that you know that knows what they're doing help you. Don't go do it yourself. I mean, even today, if I go buy a horse, I will always get somebody else's opinion. I'll let another good roper, I'll let one of my kids, or I do some stuff with Rich Skelton. I will get his opinion of the horse. Mm-hmm. I'll have him rope some, tell me what he feels. I want to watch him go with somebody on him that ropes really good. So I just don't buy a horse. You know, I mean, I've bought a few over the phone, but it was from somebody I emphatically trusted. You know, I knew that they know everything about a horse and the kind of horse that I'd want. But, you know, there's just not a lot of people out there that I would say, sure, send him.
Yeah. Well, let's get on another topic here. I want to ask you about, okay, For somebody who is kind of just getting into roping and just getting into actually going to the ropings and, mm-hmm. you know, entering up, mm-hmm. it seems like there's a lot to that because unlike other events, you're dealing with a partner, you have to get partners and get signed up. Mm-hmm. And I would think as somebody who's new might be a little intimidated about that part of it. I mean, what do you recommend? How do you go sign up at a rope and find your partners and all that stuff?
Well, you know what they do a lot of nowadays, they have a lot of low number ropings. I mean, most of the time you go to roping, you're going to have some kind of a classification number. And if you're just beginning, you can go there, go talk to whoever's producing it or the stock contractor and explain to them, you know, listen, I just started. I want into this roping. I need a number. Well, they'll give you a number based on what you told them. Mm-hmm. You know, they're assuming that you're not trying to sandbag them and come in and take all the money. But what they do a lot of ropings now where they're called pick draws. So you can enter once and draw two, or you can just put your name down and they will draw you three partners. So you don't have to go through that process and be so intimidated by going up and asking someone to rope, because most people think, well, they're going to look at me and say, well, he can't rope. I don't want to rope with him. They don't want that rejection. So they just go to the roping, put your name down, they'll draw you. You know, let's say if it's pick one, draw two, go give them your whatever the number is, $50, $100, $150, and they'll draw you three runs. Mm-hmm. So that way, I mean, you probably don't even know who you're going to rope with, but you got partners and you're entered up in the roping, you can get the experience and, you know, hopefully win something.
Yeah, that sounds like a good way to do it. When you're dealing with somebody else, it's almost like you're afraid that you're going to let them down.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's part of it. that's part of that thing that you have to overcome. That's kind of the process of learning how to rope and compete is, you know what, you just do as good as you can. And not every one of them is going to be perfect, but at least you're trying to make it good. And, you know, you hate to miss for your partner. You hate to do anything wrong for them. But, you know, it's team roping and that stuff's going to happen. You just got to get over it. And you got to have a short memory.
So at your schools and whatnot, do you talk kind of about some of the mental aspects of competition as well?
Well, I listen to people, I listen to them talk, and, you know, they'll talk about where they've been, what they've done. And I don't really get into that too much unless I hear somebody talking about, oh my God, I can't get past the third steer. The third steer. And I'm looking at them going, I will kind of attack that right there because that is the craziest thing I've ever heard. They have mm-hmm. in their mind somehow put it in there, I can't get past the third one. Mm-hmm. Third steer always gets me. So you know what the hell they're thinking about when they get to the rope. And
right.
Okay, I know I'm going to catch the first two, but I know I'm going to miss the third one. I just don't know how it's going to be yet. You know, and so you kind of got to reprogram that a little bit. Like the third steer is no different than the first one or the second one or the last one. It still takes the same approach to rope every steer. You know, if you're heading, you want to try to get a good start. You got to ride to your position. You got to put it on him and handle him. It doesn't matter which steer it is. To me, at a roping, the steer that is the first steer. I mean, you don't get no second one. You don't get no third one without the first two. You know, I try to give them a different approach. So the next time they go to a roping, you know, I will tell them the first steer is the hardest. The first steer is the hardest. Make them quit thinking about the third steer because it doesn't matter which steer it is. You know, you have to catch them all. It's just, you know, I've never been to a roping yet. Does not matter how easy they are, whether it's a number eight roping or an open roping, you have to catch. You have to get a time. And, you know, you kind of make them approach it mentally a little bit different. And, you know, so when you're going to rope, when I'm healing, I'm only thinking about getting my start, getting my position, time the steer and healing. It doesn't matter what the situation is. I'm not thinking about the last team. I'm not thinking about the team after. I'm not thinking about the time. I know what I have to do to rope this steer. And so if I do that, the outcome is probably going to be pretty good. But if I start worrying about what somebody in the stands thinks, what I look like, or what happened, or they still remember what I did on the last one when I got fell off and drug around the arena, you know, that puts thoughts in your mind. Mm-hmm. That have absolutely nothing to do with the task at hand. The task is going and roping this steer. That's the only thing you have to think about. I could care less. They could drop a bomb up in the stands and I wouldn't know it because I am looking at focused on what I have to do.
Yeah. And I would think that the ability to do that is really important for anybody, you know, to get to an advanced level. You have to be able to do that.
I think at any level to advance, you have to be mm-hmm. able to do that mm-hmm. because, you know, and it's just human nature. that there's very few people that don't think, well, did they see what I did on that one? Did I look bad? You know, so they're more worried about what they look like than what they're doing. I can't tell you how many times you could do something just crazy dumb at a roping, and I've seen it happen. I've done it, and you're thinking, oh man, that I had to look like the biggest fool in America right there. Well, you know, 5 minutes later, you could walk down the stands and ask anybody, did you see that? Nobody would see it. And if they did, they already forgot it. So they right. don't care. You're the only one that cares.
Right. I know. We can definitely be our own worst enemies.
That you put that pressure on yourself that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah. That's just adding fuel to the fire. Well, Brett, before we kind of start wrapping up today, can you give us a little bit of an overview of TotalTeamRoping.com and how the process works?
What it is I put a group of guys together and decided we was going to make training videos, try to cover everything there is about roping. So we have probably, I don't know, 12 or 1400 videos, anywhere from 3 to 7 minutes long, and trying to cover every aspect of roping, heading, heeling, everything you want, horsemanship. So people can sit down and actually, it's in my mind, the reason I got good and a lot of these other guys got good because we roped around one another. We was always roping around somebody that could rope or somebody that was better than us. So regardless if they was telling us anything, we could watch. And if you're practicing around somebody that's better than you, so you can actually watch these videos and then go rope. So that's what you're seeing. You're going to come closer to emulate what you're seeing. So if you're roping around somebody that doesn't rope as good or ropes like you and he's trying to learn too, that kind of tends to hold you down. So we put mm-hmm. this deal together and we've made it where if you're members, you can send us your videos, roping the dummy, roping cattle, whatever it might be, whatever the case dictates, and we'll look at you, watch you roping, and we'll call you and give you some advice, telling you what we see through our eyes. So that way, like if you want to send me a video, Alyssa, I could watch you rope. I would call you and say, listen, try this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give you a lot of things to work on, but I'll watch your rope and I'll say, okay, the biggest thing I see right there is she needs to change. I'll call you and we'll change that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can do that. Sending the videos and having access to somebody that can actually help you, I think is a huge deal. So yeah. That gives people all over the United States. I mean, we have members in Brazil. We have members in Australia. It's not real big in China yet, but I'm kind of waiting for that because there's a lot of them over there.
Yeah.
You know, but it gives people access to something that's never been there.
Yeah, that's really neat because even if you're going down and, you know, roping somewhere locally where maybe you don't have somebody, a great instructor to help you, but you're out there doing it, at least you have somebody that you can ask, hey, am I doing this right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and that's what we do. I mean, I'll give you an example. I had a guy send me videos from Utah yesterday. And I looked at him and I watched him rope 10 steers. I watched him heel 10 steers. And to me, I could see what he was trying to do, but his loop was just too dang big to do it. And so I called him and he's actually roping right then when I called him. He's roping with a friend of mine in Mona, Utah, Randy Brooks. And I told him, I said, listen, cut your loop down a foot, a full foot. And he goes, you're kidding me. And I said, no, but just maybe I am, maybe I'm not, but that's what I see. So try that. Let's try that. And then you call me back and tell me how that works. Cause you know, change takes time, but I right. said, sometimes a little deal like that can work. So he cut his loop down a foot and he went and roped the first 4 steers by 2 feet.
Mm.
So he calls me back and he says, man, I've never messed you, but I think you're 9 foot tall right now. And I said, well, I'm just a skosh under that. So, you know, sometimes a little tip like that can change your roping.
Yeah.
You know, where it changed his, where like all of a sudden it made it easier for him. Is he going to rope them all by 2 feet? No, nobody ever does. But it made it easier for him to do what he's attempting to do by taking, you know, some of that weight off his loop and still everything worked the same. So that's an example how it can work because he would have never, he told me, I've been doing this for years now. And he says, I always thought you're supposed to use a big loop and just follow through with it. Well, I cut his loop down and all of a sudden it just started to work and he had a good swing. It's just too much loop to make it work. So, you know, sometimes, and he said, that was a little thing. I said, well, it wasn't exactly a little thing if it was making you miss. You
right.
know, it's, that's kind of a huge thing, but, you know, it's a simple thing, but he'd have never thought of that.
Right. Yeah. He needed somebody to look at it and tell him that.
Yeah.
It seems, I mean, roping for somebody who's never done it, there's so many parts and pieces like we were talking earlier. It's kind of like golf. I mean, you golf, right? I mean,
yep.
it would be similar to yep. golf, right? And all the little intricacies.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I actually, to be honest with you, I kind of learned how to teach off of taking a golf lesson.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah, probably 7 or 8 years ago, I kind of changed the way I taught because I was played really good golf. And the day before I took a golf lesson, I went to a course, and it was one of the best rounds I ever shot. I shot a 69, which was a great round for me. Usually I'd be somewhere in the 70s. Mm-hmm. I went and take a golf lesson, and in about 45 minutes, this guy had me so screwed up that I was so totally confused, I didn't have a clue what to do. And I go 2 days later to the same course and shoot 91, you know, 22 shots difference, and it just drove me crazy trying to figure out, how did this guy take a pretty good golfer and totally just wreck him? You know, and so, and I thought about it, and I thought, you know what, how he did that is he took me, and the only way he could teach me is to make me swing like him. Well, I couldn't swing like him. Mm-hmm. And he had me trying to do everything just like he would do it out of my swing, trying to change my swing. And, you know, I got to thinking about that, and I thought, how many times maybe have I taken people and said, you got to swing like this? Well, there's different swings, but the one thing about a swing is like you can swing at different angles, but if it's a strong swing, you can deliver it right. Mm-hmm. You know, so unless people really need a total swing change, I won't do it. I will take their swing and improve on that, just mm-hmm. like he should have done mine, but he didn't. You know, so being able to, I guess, adapt to each individual is a huge thing.
Yeah.
You can take a swing, somebody's swing, and just move it just a little bit, and it makes it three times as strong, which is a huge part of it. So, yeah, I mean, it resembles that a lot.
I don't know if there's anything more frustrating than being in a position where you think you're pretty decent at something, but you just want to get better. And then you go to somebody to get some help and they try to change everything about you, that all the things that you thought were, you know, kind of working actually. And then
I thought I was really good. Now I think I really suck.
Exactly. Well, I will. I'll definitely include links to TotalTeamRoping.com in the show notes. Is that the best place for people to find you online?
That's it. Yep. TotalTeamRoping.com. Then go to that. We have a TV show we do. It's on RFD TV on every Fridays. They get 1:30 and 9:30 Central Time. So, you know, it's out there. There's a lot of good stuff in it. I know when I was learning, if I'd had access to something like this, you know, being able to get on these videos, watch these videos, call these guys and talk to them, I'd have drove them crazy. They'd have been blocking my number.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I just have one final question for you today, and it's the same one I ask all of my guests, and that is, what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
You know, just the will to get, the desire to get better, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they want to get better, you know, I don't want to get too far sideways on, you know, qualities of, you know, how they should act and all that. But if they're willing to get better and willing to spend a little bit of time and a little bit of money to do it, that's all they need. Mm-hmm. You know, they you don't need anything besides that. And team ropers, I'll put this, you know, we are notorious for spending our money on the wrong things. You know, the help, a horse, and a rope is the three most important things you're going to have to be able to get better. Instead of spending it all on a truck and a trailer and the stuff that makes you look good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to look good. I want to look really good when I leave, not really good when I show up. Because if I went there and I did the right things, I probably want something to look pretty good leaving. Mm-hmm. You know, if they can get that thought in their mind, like spend some money. You know, you have to have a good rope. You have to have a good horse. And you really, really, if you want to get better, have to have some help.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answered your question.
No. But I could. I think that's important. I mean, you can't get in that mindset of that, you know, either you think you've already learned everything or, you know, or you think, well, and I've got to look good. I've got to have the right stuff, the right clothes, the right trailer, the right, truck and all that stuff, and get so hung up on that you don't focus on what really matters.
Yeah, the part that really matters. I mean, I guess I can only look at it from my point of view, and I'm really competitive. Mm-hmm. I want to win. Mm-hmm. And I'm not worried about the other stuff. I figure if I win, I look good.
Right. It doesn't matter what you show up in.
I don't have to have pressed pants and pressed shirt and a big, I just, I want to win. And I'm willing to put in the time and the effort. And even today, I mean, I've been roping forever, but even if I go practice today, I'm going to be working on something, trying to get better every time I go rope.
Yeah. And you know, it's way better when you show up in a junky old rig and kick everybody's butts anyway. But for somebody just starting out, like, how good would that feel?
Oh, yeah. Oh, trust me, this happened a lot. I'm getting ready to do a TV show and some website work for JoJo Lamont. He's from out in West Texas. You didn't know what that boy'd show up in, but I'm telling you, when he showed up, he was fixing to kick somebody's butt.
Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you so much. This has been really great. I'm so glad that we could get together and do this today.
Yes, ma'am. Anytime we can help you, let us know. We'd be happy to do it.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Brett Beach. He really shared a lot of information that is going to be super valuable for anybody who is wanting to break into the sport of team roping. The whole numbers classification system has really changed what team roping is all about, and it is so much easier for new people to get into the event and actually be able to win, but it makes it a whole lot easier to do that when you follow some of the advice that Brett gave in this interview. And a lot of that advice, especially in regard to like what type of horse you should buy, it carries over to other events as well. If you think of you and your horse as a team, you're going to do a lot better having your horse as the stronger team member. I mean, just think about it. If you are working on a project at work or something with another team member and it's a topic that's brand new to you, wouldn't you want to be paired up with somebody who knows what they're doing that can kind of help you along the way? Well, it's the same exact thing when it comes to your horse. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode where you'll find a link to Brett's website, totalteamroping.com, and anything else that we may have chatted about, including the Cowboy Champion Summit. So be sure to check that out and get registered. I can't wait to see you there. Thank you so much for listening in to this episode of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I really appreciate you, and I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.